Hello, hello. I see you've made it to part two, which I think is the even more fun part. I gotta give Chris a shout out for being a good sport and being willing to come on a show that he likely knew was gonna be challenging and asking some uncomfortable questions. Many people don't take criticism very well, or they don't even allow themselves to be put in challenging situations. So yeah, I really appreciate that Chris is willing to come on and talk about these concerns that I have. I also would be happy to receive and address criticism from them if they ever wanted to share any with me, criticism of my approach or criticism of my criticism of their criticism of the IDW even. And I would totally not even be bothered if it was just about having different politics. I get it, there are tons of shows with different political leanings, and that's all fine, but what I think is at the heart of my discomfort here is the very specific niche of what I perceive as focusing on heterodox or IDW criticism while also being very sympathetic to them. I think that makes for a very gentle critique that downplays and misses some significant chunks of why these figures are so insidious, which can then lead to an incomplete picture of who these gurus are and even have a laundering sort of effect. It's that specific intersection of legitimizing and criticizing these heterodox figures that I find so bizarre. There is something to be said for providing them a safe space where they feel comfortable enough to come on and spout their unhinged views on ethnic cleansing, for example. But I think the contribution it makes generally to continuing to legitimize these types of figures outweighs the usefulness of having them spout their ridiculous views in a place that they feel safe to do so. If decoding the gurus was more openly branded or perceived as an in-group heterodox type podcast, I think that would resolve a lot of my concerns. But it seems to be perceived as an external, objective critics kind of thing, and I think that's what's misleading. That said, I am totally sympathetic to time constraints and technical issues preventing one from effectively pushing back on these types or even getting to all the topics you want to get to. When you're in the middle of it, it's moving so fast. I don't think the average listener understands how quickly a contentious conversation moves on from something you were hoping to touch upon. And the gish galloping, there's only so much you can counter before they move on to 20 other things you now have to counter. Like, I have been through that myself. I went through it with Sam. I wasn't totally satisfied with how I pushed back on him back in 2016, but to be fair, I was a fan of his then and very clearly not an objective critic. And at some points, I was simply too shocked at what he was saying to respond strongly. And at other times, I was trying hard to see what he had just said in the best possible light, or trying to be polite, which, if I look back at now, is also very, very frustrating to me. So, yeah, I totally get that. I am also self-critical on that type of thing, too. But I do think that criticizing Sam in 2016 versus in 2024 is very different. Things are a lot clearer now. There's a lot less plausible deniability. But anyway, in this part, we get into more specific concerns, issues about responsible framing, softballing, and things like that. And things like, at what point do we recognize and consciously not contribute to maintaining the perception of reasonable intellectual for someone as far gone as Harris? If he's not fully discredited when peddling Great Replacement or Eurabia conspiracy theories, if he's not, after he says the Jews in part brought the Holocaust on themselves, is it now that he's shown himself to consider ethnic cleansing not such a big deal, or now that he's dedicated the last half year to pumping out propaganda in favor of an ongoing plausible genocide? Or when he thinks that London has been taken over by stealth jihadists, at what point Has he crossed that line into being as embarrassing as, say, Brett Weinstein? We explore all these questions and more right here. And as always, if you enjoy the show, please consider supporting via patreon.com/nicemangoes. And also consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Anyway, where do we leave off? Last time, we were talking about whether or not Sam is being honest when he claims he doesn't know enough about someone he's associated with, commenting on, or promoting. Here's the episode.
Welcome to the Polite Conversations Podcast, where every episode is focused on civility, decorum, and good manners. And I'm your lovable, non-controversial host, Ina. If you know me, you know I definitely don't like to ruffle any feathers at all.
Very, very, very high levels of confidence might be the way to put it as well.
That's the nicest possible way one could put that. Okay, so, sure. Sure, Chris.
Three buckets: ignorance, genuine ignorance, strategic ignorance, and overconfidence. I don't think that fits a particularly good picture in competition.
I mean, I would use different words to describe those things, but sure. Yeah, I would be like lying, deceptiveness.
I don't have much hesitation with saying if somebody supplies you the information and then you go to say, I don't know, your only options are that you literally just don't pay attention to relevant information that people provide you, or you are saying things that are incorrect because it suits your argument at that time. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. So, how we got into this was that you were saying that you weren't satisfied with Sam's pushback, right?
Yes. I mean, he didn't give any.
Any. Okay. So, I have to say, I was listening to a couple of your episodes and I saw that emerge as quite a theme in your guru decoding, right? Like, there was one episode where you're talking about a conversation someone was having with Elon, and I just put down the note where you say, metaphorically filleting Elon.
Yes.
Right? I don't object to that description about ass-kissing conversation. And then you were critical about Sam going on Majid's, Substack, where, you know, they looked like they were reconciling. I think Sam even apologized to Majid at one point.
He did.
Extremely cringe and embarrassing.
Yeah.
So you were critical about that. And, you pointed out that it is not great that you can sit down with someone like Alex Jones and completely ignore all the terrible things that they do and say and then just, like, have funny jokes with them.
Yes, the indulgent, like, backslapping for having difficult conversations is...
Right. I think I heard Matt on the D'Angelo episode. I think you were talking about something else in the beginning. He was talking about, maybe it was Lex and Kanye?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kanye.
So he described it as a crèche-type world in which these independent podcasters live, in which all the interviews are softball interviews, all complimenting what wonderful human beings they are, all engaging in mutual backpatting and mutual cross-promotion.
Yeah, the one qualification I give, though, is like, I don't see much issue with... that's not entirely true. Like, I don't think there's that much issue with an indulgent interview. Like, say you interview Stephen King and you're a big fan of Stephen King. And, you know, like, I don't feel you need to, every interview, every interaction has to be this, like, challenging, trying to find.
Sure. But if it's Alex Jones?
The usual thing is, the thing which gets me is when people present it as a hard-hitting like, you know, like challenging interview.
Which all the IDW do, basically.
Exactly. Like, you know, to put Tucker and Putin would be a really obvious example. Or Glenn Greenwald and Alex Jones. And I see that as different than, like, say, a Louis Farrow interviewing, you know, like a white supremacist or
Well, so Louis Theroux is actually really good at that. I feel like he's never like doing it in an apologetic sort of way. He's not softening their image. Like you always, like the framing is always responsible.
Yeah, so I think he's been criticized a couple of times for like being too, you know, too humanizing of his subjects. But I agree that like the general thing that I get with him is it's very clear, like, you know, you've made this point as well, that somebody being a human isn't surprising, right? Like, you know, that Nazis get breakfast or whatever.
Yeah.
You know that. And it is interesting. It can be interesting to look at, you know, the lives of extremists or cult leaders or, you know, or various polemical groups or whatever the case might be. But the point is that you shouldn't whitewash their ideology.
Yes, yes.
It is. So you can't humanize them. You can't talk about what their ideology is. Like what you just described with Robert Spencer, right? Like, yeah. I know in that conversation, I imagine that it is not, you know, being... like that you were pushing back, but I can't imagine a conversation where somebody has with like a Stephen Molyneux or a Robert Spencer and they get them to outline their worldview and it's useful, right? Like, you know, talking to the Proud Boys or whatever, but it has to be done responsibly. Like,
yeah, it has to be framed like they're extremists.
Yes. So, yeah, like I think it, the framing matters and also how you present the conversation. So yeah, if you,
but also are... I feel like if society is at a tipping point where these kinds of guys are getting a lot of increased support, it might be best to hold off on platforming them at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm not a never platform kind of person, but I feel like say in the height of the Trump era, maybe don't just interview the Proud Boys or Alex Jones or someone and give them a big platform to spout their views on.
Yeah, like the, I mean, kind of the principle would be like Joe Rogan inviting Alex Jones on, right?
Yeah,
And Alex Jones using it as a way to kind of recruit new audience.
Right. Or like an anti-vaxxer during a pandemic, but in a society that is not under any threat, in some magical society where you're safe from these people being believed, then perhaps it's safe to just kind of be like looking at them and trying to understand their perspective. Yeah.
Anti-vax stuff is like, because it's a bit like, you know, there's shows like Knowledge Fight or QAnon, yeah. Anonymous, right? And they're,
yeah,
essentially every week looking and...
But they're not bringing on like QAnon people.
No, and, they, yeah, have done. They have done on some occasions, but in those, okay, occasions, they're, you know, like you say, you know, it's kind of responsibly done. So it's the same thing as during the pandemic. I agree that, you know, people should be much more careful about anti-vax stuff. But I do think there's plenty of cases where, you know, there was a good interview with an anti-vax person. Mm. And like RFK Jr. being interviewed and like being allowed to kind of demonstrate his crazy views, I think has been to his detriment,
right,
the broader public. But, you know, some segment that also really like that, so.
Right, so it, like, you know, it depends where you are, what kind of climate you're in. In Pakistan, I would never advise interviewing an Islamist because there could be easily lots of support drummed up just from that, like, one, yeah, interview, right? But yeah, in, yeah, yeah, the UK or in North America, is that really as much of a threat? I don't know. I don't think it's the same kind of climate, so...
Yeah, I'd agree.
Nazis, if you're going to interview a Nazi in Pakistan, I don't think that's going to be, you know, drumming up much support for the guy.
Yeah.
But if you're interviewing a Nazi in Europe or in North America, it might.
Yes. Yes, this is true. So I agree that like it can the context depends on the way that you frame things, but also the way that, you know, what the person is saying and whatnot. It all depends. So there's plenty of circumstances where I can imagine interviewing an extremist, like, you know, interviewing Majid and it being a reasonable thing to do. And another circumstance where interviewing Majid would be an absolutely terrible thing to do. And it would all depend on, like a whole bunch of factors. Yeah. But what you shouldn't do is say you're going to interview Majid and hash out the difficult conversation and then talk to Majid. And any time that he references, you know, like one of his crazy conspiracy things, like kind of, you know, deflect onto a less controversial topic or agreed, that kind of thing. And then at the end say, oh, you know, Majid, it was really nice catching up with you. we should do it again.
Right, which is kind of what Sam did.
Yes, he did.
And so there was another tweet of yours that you, I think, tweeted a screenshot of after Brett went on Alex Jones, where I think this is from 21. You said something like, Dark Horse is InfoWars for college grads, and it's getting more extreme. The people with influence and audiences who continue to recommend it and treat Brett as a legitimate expert should not be forgotten after it becomes common knowledge.
Yes, that's right.
So, you know, these are all things that I agree with, and I can see that you are frustrated when people are not properly framing these guys or properly pushing back on these types. But I also feel that kind of frustration when I listen to your episodes sometimes.
With Sam.
With Sam and some of the other ones, like with Josh Zepps. I think that one happened soon after we had had our conversation. And I was like, oh, you know, one thing that these guys are definitely prepared for and good at is the anti-vax stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think that you guys really pushed back on Josh Zepps or talked about much of his really ridiculous views. And instead, you know, it was kind of like, oh, you know, I listened to you on the radio and it's so nice to have you on the show. And I mean, he's kind of like a lot of these IDWers. I don't know if you're fully aware, but like one of his ridiculous views is that he's upset that people can't say the N-word anymore.
Yeah, I know there's something about an appearance on Rogan before, and I know Josh is like in the, you know, the general heterodox sphere, right? As you said, he's just touring around with Douglas Murray at the minute, but also left his position at ABC recently, right? But I do see a distinction between like Josh and the more extreme wing, like did you listen to his discussion? Actually, it ended up getting taken down, but the one where he had a colleague on, and it was over that topic about like the use of the M word. And
no, those. I did not actually.
So one of his colleagues at the ABC radio station like took issue with, I don't know if it was specific, that came up, but it was other issues, right? And they had a like a debate back and forth, and it was pretty like contentious.
I wish I had listened to it.
It got took down at the request of the other person that took part in it. But in that discussion, I find Josh a lot more reasonable than I would other people that I've heard debate that. And is that
because the woke person was too screamy and Josh was polite or something?
The woke person didn't do a fantastic job. that is true. I don't think they came across fantastically well. But it did lead to, you know, a bunch of clarifications about, so are you saying this? No, I'm saying that, and vice versa. And I didn't take Josh to be taking a kind of Murray or even a Sam Harris kind of line on those things. So when we spoke to Josh, it was partly in response to him wanting to push back at us about the way that we Joe Rogan.
Right? Yeah, and he did a pretty good job because you guys didn't really push back on, like, you know, he just came on your platform and talked about how Joe Rogan's a big puppy dog and argued in favor of continuing to let Rogan spread his garbage misinformation. He said something like, Barry Weiss and Sam Harris were good heterodox thinkers who do look at the extremists in their midst. So, like, his, you know, calibration is completely off there. Yeah, and I think he did also call himself an anti-LGBTQ kind of gay, which is such a weird thing to say.
But he is, I mean, he's on that, like, quite openly on his, you know.
Yeah. But is that not, like, something that is, like, if someone said that to me, I would be like, well, what do you fucking mean by that?
Yeah, I would as well. But, I mean, as far as I understand with his position, it's kind of aligned with the Douglas Murray one, mm-hmm. right, about the pride, we have achieved a bunch of things that we wanted, so we don't need to, to make it, like, the pride parades and whatnot should be less sexualized or this kind of thing. But I, on those kind of issues, I defer to, I'm not gay or a member of those communities, and, like, people are allowed to have different opinions on it.
Oh, sure, but you can certainly sense when something is a bit reactionary, right?
Right, like, but, like, his position on that, you know, he's a gay guy living with his family in Australia and debates it with other people in, like, the public about it. So I, like, on that issue, I don't know what I'd pull him up except to say, well, your opinion on it is this, right? And he's already, like, kind of open about that.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying it's a secret. I'm just saying that, you know, it would have elicited some sort of, oh, that's strange. Okay. Like, is it, like, Dave Rubin or, like, Douglas Murray?
Yeah, but in that case, I think what addressing that would, like, lead to in that circumstance would be Josh outlining his perspective on it and Matt and me saying, all right, well, other perspectives are available, but we're not able to, you know, to speak to them much. So it doesn't seem like a good idea to get into it. But in the case of, like, the anti-vaccine stuff, I view that conversation as, like, Josh did, as you say, like, kind of argue that Joe Rogan is a kind of, you know, a puppy dog, and he just is, you know, he's a big softie and he's not really meaning to pump anti-vaccine information. I think that's wrong, right?
Yeah.
And I think our coverage of that shows it's wrong. But I don't think many people in our audience, from the feedback that we receive, like, shifted their view to Josh's.
You don't always receive feedback saying that, oh, you know, hello, I have shifted my Josh's.
But we do receive feedback when people think that we are wrong and the guest is right. we often receive quite strong feedback. So, like, with Josh, the majority of the feedback was kind of what you just outlined, which was just doesn't really see the problem correctly here. And I would still say that now. Like, I'd happily, you know, explain that to Josh. And I think I did in the interview push back, but then, you know, there is a kind of limit to the amount that you can do that and not just end up, like, stuck on the point for like a long time. And there's varying degrees of comfort with that. But so I don't see Josh, like, I was kind of interested to see what his argument was going to be for us getting Rogan wrong, but he didn't really convince me. Like, I think he's wrong about...
Right, but I mean, can you see that someone like me might be frustrated and think that the pushback wasn't effective? Yeah. How you might be frustrated?
Yeah, I would imagine, like, you know, it's much stronger in the case of listening to Sam, right, the conversation. Right.
No, sure, but I'm just saying that there's, like, a few cases like that. Where, you know, as I expressed in our last conversation, my main concern is, in terms of your podcast, is that it is framed as experts dispassionately decoding these gurus, but I think there's a definite slant, and I think it's a little bit IDW sympathetic.
But yeah, I mean, I would say that, like, from the first episode, we recorded, we position ourselves as, like, moderate left, but, like, with some sympathy for some of the complaints of like the heterodox sphere about things in academia and that kind of stuff, and that is where I think in general I align, but I would anticipate and do know that people with more progressive politics would find various things that we say frustrating. You know, the same way, like, when I listen to Knowledge Fight, they are much more progressive than I am. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes Jordan's asides about politics or murdering people or various things...
I don't listen to that, so I'm not familiar.
Well, you could just, like... you could take it from my point of view. There are various statements made which are, like, relatively extreme in political terms, but I understand that is, you know, the Knowledge Fight kind of those guys.
But that's not like a general progressive.
Well, no, it's more towards, I mean, I'm not saying he wants to kill people. It's more in along the lines of, you know, that a revolution and class warfare.
Right. So that's very different from my politics. I mean, I imagine you probably listen to some of the stuff that I put out and you think it's, whoa, you know, not to your taste.
Like, you know, I don't speak German, guys, right?
But I don't think you will find my statements being like that.
So, like, I would say, you know, you said last time as well that, like, between you and Daniel or Jack, right, there's there's a difference, because I think, I don't want to misrepresent them, but I think they are, like, openly in favor of communism of some variety.
Marxism, right?
So in the same way...
Jack identifies as a Marxist, I believe. I don't identify as anything but, you know, a broad progressive, and I certainly have criticisms of capitalism.
Yeah.
But I don't exactly share those views.
Yeah, so I would... I mean that basically I'm drawing the analogy that, like, when I listen to I Don't Speak German or Knowledge Fight, there's various things that they say that reflect their kind of political lean, which I find frustrating. But I kind of, you know, the general thing about their content I find interesting. And, you know, so, like, and it's not necessary that they share my politics. I'm not saying they have to, right? So I just kind of file it as, all right, so that's the political lean in
Right. Yes. So here's the thing. Like, I have no problem with people having different political leanings, and I listen to mostly, actually, podcasts that I disagree with. I don't know why, but that's just what I listen to. But what frustrates me in particular is the framing of being an IDW critic while being IDW sympathetic. It's like like false advertising a little bit, where I feel like, I mean, you may not intend it that way, but I feel like it's like an in-group podcast, perhaps, by us, for us, criticisms that we can handle, not too woke. But then it ropes in some people that are interested in criticisms of Sam, Eric, Brett. And it does not, like, because they're so happy with anyone criticizing those fools, it does not clearly allow people to see, like, the project. And that frustrates me. And one of the clearest examples of that that I saw recently is under your, or maybe not under, but maybe someone tweeted a link to your conversation with Sam, and they said, you know, it's so clear from this, like, just how far right he is. I get so frustrated, you know, when people frame Sam as a liberal or whatever. And I just said underneath it, I'm like, you realize that includes the hosts of this show. And they just, they don't want to engage with that. It's like a weird cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
But it's true, right? Like, in your conversation with Sam, or maybe the one about Sam on Chris Williamson, I heard your co-host say a few times things like, oh, you know, Sam is a very good liberal. You know, he comes off really well to my ears. Or, you know, he might be a little Douglas Murray adjacent, but he's very different. He's miscalculating stuff. He's not genuinely sympathetic.
I think in the, like, in the case of Matt, from what I know, he would regard Matt, I don't think he would regard Sam, like, as a super great political role model.
But he said time and time again, we even talked about this last time, and I know you're not responsible for his views at all. I'm not trying to hold you responsible for his views.
I think it's not Constantine.
It's pretty clear that he is a bit, a fair bit to the right of you. I think that becomes clear sometimes.
Oh, that's interesting, because I think the general view is like the opposite, but that's...
Really? That's not what I've heard from a bunch of people, actually.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good to hear, because I think I usually hear the opposite, so the...
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Although sometimes I do get categorized, I think much to everybody's disagreement, who knows, as like extremely progressive, right, or woke, right, which but it's just people matching critical of
that, yeah. Is not how I would categorize you, certainly.
Well look, I will say one thing about the conversation with Sam just before we get into the rest of the things you raised there, is that we were scheduled to have a 2-hour conversation with Sam, and then when he jumped on the call, he said he had an hour 15.
Oh no.
Which is why, you know, that bit at the end, which I kept in, where you hear him say, you know, I don't know if we're going to have time to get to this. And also why, after about 30 minutes on the self and meditation, it felt like, you know, we'd only covered 2 or 3 questions in that amount of time. So we were like... quite wary about the time constraints. We did end up recording for like an hour and 45 minutes, but yes, that was quite frustrating, because we originally scheduled 2 hours and we had planned things, you know, with that in mind. So yes, that's relevant context. But on the other part, so I wouldn't describe myself, I don't self-identify, Anna, as IDW sympathetic, but I would say heterodox sympathetic. So you can,
so you just like a better sounding term for
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
okay.
That's the way.
Yeah, because I think it's useful to openly lay these things out.
Yeah, the IDW, as I see it, is, you know, the kind of like Barry Weiss, Eric Weinstein, like that whole revolutionary renegade intellectual thing. And I think that's bollocks, right? And I think that is a pretty clear thing that I have very little sympathy for. What I do have sympathy more is that there are biases in academia. There are like like to give an example from stuff that I'm familiar with, the stereotype threat literature in psychology has basically been shown to be extremely unreplicable. And that was a part of a research agenda for, you know, over a decade. And it aligns with like kind of progressive politics quite well. So there was a strong reluctance to review that literature. Similar sort of thing with power posing.
You have to explain what you're talking about.
I'll do it briefly as well.
Please.
Frustration was with the monologuing stuff when dealing with Sam. But the stereotype threat is basically the psychology about like if you remind people that they're a woman before they go into a test, that they will do worse because of the negative, like a maths test, because of the negative stereotypes associated with femininity and maths or whatever, right? And there was a whole bunch of research showing that if you prime people with these identities that have negative stereotypes attached, that you'll make them perform worse. And so there were attempts to make interventions to reduce this and so on, right? For good goals, right? To stop people from marginalized or minority groups from being like double victimized by stigma, right? A good agenda. But a lot of the work was basically poorly conducted and conducted with that kind of desired conclusion in mind. And so when people started doing more rigorous testing of it with like kind of open science methods, a lot of the findings couldn't replicate.
Sure.
And there was the people who were originally critical of this literature were presented, you know, as somewhat negative. And in some cases it was justified, in others not. But so in psychology, there is that. There's things like power posing where, like, Amy Cuddy famously gave this TED talk about people standing in a kind of dominating pose, and this in a bunch of studies showing that it changes your hormones, makes you more confident and so on. And this will allow women and marginalized people to kind of up their chances higher. And
so. Okay, look, I'm no academic, but that sounds very shady and hacky to me.
Right, like kind of, so, the same thing as the D'Angelo end of the racist thing. So, like, I think that a lot of those criticisms have validity to them. And
that sounds reasonable to me. However, I think dwelling and obsessing on D'Angelo does not seem reasonable to me.
Yeah. Yes. I agree. And I also agree that, like, whatever your particular views of Kendi and various things that he's said, it is my experience that the strongest critics of Kendi have spent very, very little time with his content, right? Like
like calling him a pornographer of race is not reasonable, you're saying?
Yes, or like it's more that they're just familiar with social media snippets and so on. And I'm not saying that he hasn't made, you know, provocative like statements or whatever, you know, like there are things that you can focus on, but I constantly get the same examples given, you know, like three or four little events, and not like kind of chapters in his book or this kind of thing. So that I'm sympathetic in that realm, and I'm also because maybe it's possible, at least because of not coming from an American background, that I find a lot of the stuff around culture war thing to be very based on an American perspective of things that doesn't ring true to you know, my experience in Northern Ireland or in Japan for that matter. But I think that's a crucial difference, because I'm not sympathetic to like the Joe Rogan, Lex Friedman presentation of heterodoxy.
But you are very charitable and very sympathetic to Sam Harris for some reason.
I would disagree. Sam would disagree.
Sam, listen. Someone who is kissing Sam's ass and just says one word against him, Sam would find that like too much.
Yeah, that is true. But that, like, so I think Like, you know, you talked about whenever the person who responded under the comment saying, you know, Sam seems much more extreme, right, than than they had previously suspected.
No, they said this is a clear example of how extreme he can be, and I really hate when people frame him as a reasonable liberal. And yes, you guys had literally done that on that episode and the previous Sam Harris coverage that you did.
Yeah, but so
maybe not you, but more so your co-host, who literally said he is a good liberal. He comes off very well to my ears.
Yeah, but I would take it in most occasions that Matt will have said that he's going to be referencing Sam talking about you know, the problems with Trump or vaccines. And what he won't have
said, but as you said, you can't just, you know, ignore the Alex Jonesian types of shit and just focus on the good stuff.
No. So, but what I mean is, whenever discussing Sam's, like, foreign policy or comments on Muslims or his view about, especially recently, the Gaza-Israel conflict, I don't think there will have been any time that, you know, the argument is, oh, that Sam is very reasonable and moderate on those positions. So,
but does someone have to say, is Sam very reasonable and moderate specifically on those positions for you guys to frame him as not a moderate, good liberal? Because nobody was specifically asking, is Sam reasonable or moderate on vaccines or on Trump?
Well, no, but people are, because, like,
but in that conversation, that was just a general framing.
Yeah. So, on that conversation, in, like, the Chris Williamson one, I think they, I hadn't listened back to the actual episode we'd done, so I can't remember all of the topics. But I think that, you know, in comparison to most of the people in a heterodox sphere, the people that will go on Chris Williamson's show, Sam will talk about the insurrection and the lies about the ballot, you know, like, but electoral fraud and that kind of thing. And in those respects, he is pretty much in line with the standard, like, liberal perspective. Like,
so you think it's fine then to just frame him as a good liberal?
Yeah, I think anybody listening to our episode on Sam, like, oh, well, no, not anybody. That's not fair, because you have a difference of opinion and other people would as well. But I think a lot of people that listened to our episode on Sam would not come away from it that we are endorsing him as a generally reliable and good source.
But that's not because of you. That's because of him being completely unhinged. He can't help himself. But when you're talking about him, in fact, even the fact that you chose to not look at all the other content he had been putting out at that time, which was completely ridiculously unhinged and bloodthirsty and making excuses for a plausible genocide, you chose to pick out one appearance where he's not saying those things.
Yeah, but there was a reason for that. So the reason we took the Chris Williamson content is because, like, I'm sure you find that conversation extremely boring that he had with Chris Williamson if you listen to it.
Because
it was all things that he talks about all of the time.
Yeah.
But it's quite representative of, like, Sam's topics, right? Except you're right that he didn't, not his Gaza-Israel stuff.
Which was the main thing that he was putting out. Right. He has been putting out since October 7th.
But so if we take, there's a bunch of responses about this. Because, like, if you look at our subreddit, right, there's, or Sam Harris's subreddit for that matter, there's one of two views. One is that, like, we are absolutely haters, obsessed with tearing down a good man, Sam. Like, they obviously haven't listened to your content, but and
oh, my stuff gets deleted on Sam's subreddit as soon as it's posted.
Right.
As soon as it is.
if you look at any of the threads about us, right, there's a very mixed thing about how this, what people view us as. And similarly on the subreddit, our subreddit, there's a bunch of people that are very, very, very strongly disliked Sam and think that we are too soft in the same way that you would. Mm-hmm. And there's a contingent which are more sympathetic to him as well, right? And usually they end up disagreeing. But I would say the criticism of Sam's position is clearer. But in our case, right, especially with people like Sam, we were trying to get content that would be not taken as a hit piece, that would cover like a bunch of different topics, not just
taken one, as a what, sorry,
like a hit piece, you know, that would be presented as us selecting the worst piece of content that we can find.
But how about just the content that he is putting more representative, like when it came to Hassan and the Houthi or Robin DiAngelo? Yeah. You guys did a lot of contextualizing and a lot of, you know, going out of your way to frame these people. You know, I think with Robin DiAngelo, you went back a few years to find some more, like what you called bombastic content. Yeah, with Hassan, yeah. You shared a whole bunch of his clips, like to first frame how ridiculous he can sound. But I don't see that with Sam Harris.
No, not in that. Not in that episode, but that's...
Not in any episode.
Well,
not when you're covering Gadsad, not even with Jordan Peterson, not even with Zeps.
See, that would be a difference. So let me stick with Sam just so we, for the minute. This is not the first episode we've done on Sam. It's the coding, first coding we did. But we had the conversation with him, but we also had the episode about his... like 8-minute video, you know, advertising. Which you
very quickly walked back when he was on last time. Like, oh, sorry, you know, yeah, your app is good.
I disagree there, because the bit that that Sam would take as walking back as well are the bits that we weren't strongly disputing. Like the fact that Sam, as it turns out, was being more generous and like he kind of leaped on this point about the like giving the free subscriptions away, right? But actually,
I thought that was pretty good when you guys did it,
right? But like,
but then I was disappointed.
That wasn't a mean criticism, and actually, I raised that point because Sam forgot about it at the end of the thing, and I did that because I was about to get into more worse things, and then he jumped on it and kind of presented it as a big like coup de grace, but it wasn't, because it was never. Our argument was much more about him combining his politics and the kind of authority that comes from the meditation app. But that's one episode that we did on Sam. Then the other one is the whenever Joe Rogan had his apology video, you know, the...
which Sam said that Joe Rogan was the cure for racism. Right. Yes. Right.
So we covered that as well. And Sam has regularly kind of featured throughout our content on various episodes. So like Sam is probably, if anybody in our audience doesn't know who he is, it's going to be like 5%, right? Or something, I would say around that. Whereas with Hassan, there's a whole bunch of people that have no idea, like have never heard anything about even Hassan existing.
That because your audience skews more IDW or, sorry, heterodox?
No, because I think it's more just there isn't an overlap with streamers, because they wouldn't know, there isn't that many that would also know, you know, like Destiny as well. Like when we cover him, we'll have to contextualize as well. So it might just be like demographic as opposed to, you know.
But how many would know Gadsad? And I feel like you missed a bunch of really important things there when you did not bring up, you know, his association with Holocaust deniers and white nationalists. And I think your host called him wholesome, a harmless uncle. Yeah, which you guys brought up again I think it was in the Hassan episode. And you even said that that's pretty much true.
Yeah, again. No, that is like what Matt presented Gadsad as being. Yeah, so like that is a sort of a running joke that he was too soft on Gadsad. But I agree that it is the case that we don't always like go through all the backstory. And I mean, like, even in the case of Hassan, you know, that is not the backstory of Hassan, right?
No, but I feel like you certainly went out of your way to contextualize him more than you did Gadsad.
Yeah, but this is partly related to covering streamers, because part of the issue with, like, the streamers is that if you take a piece of content, the general thing is streaming. So, like, when we cover Destiny, we'll play a bunch of the clips that he's kind of famous for. As well, right? Like, infamous for might be the way to put it, because it relates to their, you know, like their personalities are kind of like mixed in with the content that they produce. And when they have, like, you know, an 8-hour stream, it's different than somebody that has, you know, distinct, like, kind of distinct pieces of content.
Yeah.
Right. So there's an element of that, but it is true that we don't always like go back into the back catalogue and cover things in depth. And part of that is sometimes just we don't know, you know.
But can you see that could be similarly frustrating in the way that you are frustrated with the IDW softball interviews?
Yeah, I tried to, I think that I would try to avoid that, and that it hasn't happened as much before as it has now. But I also can imagine that out of everyone we covered, that there are people that think that we are missing like important context for why they're bad.
So, like, Chris Williamson, last time we spoke, you were like, oh yeah, I didn't know, and then I looked at his output and there's like Sargon and yeah, he's pretty bad. And
yeah,
this time you were like, oh, he's not that bad, he's like a Manosphere guy, you know, but not really. You like minimize like his extreme Manosphere-ness.
Yeah,
and so, like, I don't understand the thing about plugging his drink constantly. Like, I don't know if that's a joke or are you really
now, so the thing with Chris Williamson is, like, I agree. I think I would largely agree with any like positioning him in the kind of hetero, you know, like, he is somebody that would be happy to have Douglas Murray on and Jordan Peterson, and
he has had
but My position on like Chris's content has been that if he is to dethrone Joe Rogan, I think it will be a step up because he is not interested
anti-vax.
In anti-vax and politics in the same way.
No, I don't agree. I don't think he's not interested in politics. He's pushing a very right-wing politics, a very misogynistic politics.
Right.
All
but that's,
the time.
That's more like the kind of Manosphere influence, right?
And a bunch of other right-wing talking points, anti-woke, anti-DEI. I mean, it's endless. It's
right.
Very political.
So, like,
but being myopic about like the anti-vax stuff, I think it's concerning, because then it will let a lot of awful people through your radar. Like,
Lehman. It's not just the anti-vax thing, because it's more that I would say, there are people who would be very happy to put out content with Andrew Tate, right? Like promoting right-wing, like, you know, just Andrew Tate stuff, right? Mm. And like Fresh and Fit kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. That era of the Manosphere. And I think that area is like kind of more, would be very critical about someone like Chris Williamson being too, too soft, right, on a whole bunch of issues, like not.
So because he's not like the most extreme, like being in prison for trafficking, human trafficking.
No, so my argument isn't anybody should therefore go seek him out and replicate his politics. My argument is purely that in terms of that whole ecosystem, that he's less objectionable than most of the people that are his competitors. And that's better. But I will also say that he did an interview with, who was this recently? I can't remember if it was Piers Morgan, right? So he did an interview with Piers Morgan, and Piers Morgan asked him about Andrew Tate, and his responses were very diplomatic, right? Like, he didn't want to say something negative about Tate, which is, a very low bar. So, but that's the thing. To be clear, I'm absolutely not encouraging anybody to go sign up for Chris Williamson's content and that kind of thing. But if you give me like a poison chalice and say, you know, Joe Rogan or Chris Williamson, I will pick Chris Williamson every time. And I do think these people are going to exist in out of that whole ecosystem. He's one of the less objectionable.
Sure, but I feel like you could frame him a little more effectively as a Manosphere guy rather than minimize his.
Yeah, well, he's definitely.
Or plug his drinks. I don't know what that's about.
Well, that's a joke because he made a productivity drink, and I'm addicted to caffeine. So I want to get off the sweet coffee that I've been drinking, and I need a coffee replacement. So Matt and I don't promote, we haven't. You know, promoted AG1 or this kind of thing. So a running joke is like about us, taking supplement money or that kind of thing. And an optimizer energy drink would be a funny one to promote.
I don't know. I don't know if it's as clear. It's confusing. I don't know if it's clear that it's a joke, because it could be seen as
guerrilla marketing.
Yeah.
This again would be like in the opposite way. When we've made jokes about it, we've had people like complain, like, why are we going after, you know, this, like why do we keep being cruel about it? So I don't know. I think it's... It is intended as a joke. We are not endorsing. There's no business arrangement.
All right. Okay, let's quickly try to get in as many things about your Sam conversation now. Yeah, so one thing that I had a criticism about in that conversation was the fact that you guys accepted when Sam said that, there's a moral difference and the IDF isn't intentionally targeting civilians, when it has been repeatedly proven. I think the New York Times did a report where they studied the craters left by certain bombs. And it was shown through that study that Israel is deliberately attacking the safe zones with their heaviest bombs. And they did it over 200 times. When they told people to flee to the south of Gaza because that was going to be safe, then they dropped 2-ton bombs. And just recently, it also came out in Haaretz, where soldiers have been talking to Haaretz, saying that they created these kill zones, so like these imaginary lines, where they were permitted to basically shoot anything that moves. So if someone crossed over that line, they would just get shot. And there are several incidents recorded, people waving white flags, getting shot straight up, including their own hostages. And then there's also reports from doctors talking about how children from 5 to 8 year olds were coming to the hospital with sniper wounds to the head. And there was like one official Mossad guy, I think, who talked about how no one over the age of 4 is an innocent civilian. So, I mean, there was lots of evidence of IDF intentionally targeting civilians.
I think most reasonable people have a lot of sympathy with, obviously, the victims of terrorist attacks and also the civilians who are killed by indiscriminate bombing. I guess, look, I'm just going to make one
point. But it is different. It's just, again, we can't lose sight of, I mean, body count just does not get at the moral difference between the two sides.
Yeah,
but that's a point that, like, again, people forget it whenever. It's just, it can't.
It can't maintain
its salience in the face of images of dead children being pulled out of rubble in Gaza, right? It's just like you have to sort of rerun the argument again so as to gain some perspective on what's happening.
I think we all get that motivations matter, right? There is a difference between a child who is killed by a bomb that wasn't targeted at them and a child who was executed by a terrorist.
Okay, so I think, what I would say in that, like in terms of accepting Sam's framing is like, on the one hand, that there are a couple of occasions, like when Sam is rolling off things and like in response to it, we say, you know, OK, given that, blah, 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 right? Or like there is a difference or But in some respect, like it is normally because want to get to like a point, right? So like even if Sam is wrong about something, it doesn't matter for like the particular argument that we want to get to. So that was some of the case. But the other point is like, even whenever Sam was saying that there's, you know, the Israeli military never would, like, basically presenting it in the way Douglas Murray does, that it's a saintly force, that, you know, everything would be an unintended casualty. I don't know all the examples you're giving, but, like, it wouldn't at all surprise me, and I know that there are documented cases of, like, intentional targetings. But even then, even if it were the case that, like, you didn't accept that, and you thought that it was all accidental, collateral damage style things. The argument we wanted to present was like that at some point that still is a, like, you still have to take consideration of that. Like Matt, when he was arguing with that, with Sam, wanted to say, you can't just constantly invoke the intention if your policy is killing, you know, tens of thousands of civilians, right?
Like, right. So, and then he brought up like the traffic. He tried to compare it to like traffic deaths. He's like, that's so obscene in the face of a ongoing plausible genocide.
Yes. So, and then like in response to that, I believe Matt said, right, you know, to highlight the same way that is a fatuous comparison, like, yes, and if people were intentionally murdering people with a car, we would very quickly like pay attention to it, right?
To give a very anodyne example, but this makes the point from the other side, right? Like, the three of us live in societies where there's some ambient level of carnage due to car accidents every year, and it's totally predictable. I mean, in the United States, there will be something like 40,000 people killed this year on our highways, right? And it's just because people are bad drivers, and, you know, eventually self-driving cars will solve this problem, but not yet, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we know to a moral certainty that we could reduce all this death and suffering if we just lowered the speed limit, right? Just made it like wherever you can drive 60 miles an hour, let's cap that at 30 miles an hour. We would save thousands of lives, probably tens of thousands of lives in America, right? We don't do it. Are we just sociopathic murderers for not doing that? Is that like every day of our lives? Are we like Saddam Hussein level evil bastards for not doing that? No, we're not even thinking about it, right? It's like, it's just not even, and when you bring it up, it's just kind of a curiosity. It's like, well, yeah, but that would just be so boring to drive a maximum of 30 miles an hour. It would take forever. There'd be some other, it'd be economic costs.
We totally get it. With the point right. is well you made. Know, and likewise, yeah. if there was an equivalent number of car deaths, but they were being caused by murderers, right, then there would be an outcry and extreme measures would be taken to stop it.
All those details really do matter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I would say that some of that is simply us trying to not maybe not always in the best way, but like, you know, trying to get to a point that we plan to talk, and then Sam brings up like a bunch of different things. So we kind of like skip past a whole bunch of things, because like with his portrayal of London, for example, there's so much there that I wanted to push back on, but I only, you know, we had already framed it that we only have a couple of minutes. And then I also wanted to say he's misrepresenting academics. So like I chose the academic one, but I like it. Yeah. So some of it is that, like us kind of trying to pick our battles. But the other point is, even accepting Sam's framing, that there should still be various issues that we thought were obvious in that equation. So we didn't intend it to be that we were signing off on his interpretation, but rather...
But like, you did agree at the time. You both were like, no, it's different if a child is not being targeted versus...
Yes, but so that point is, I mean, like, I think that basic point is absolutely obvious,
of
right?
Of course, but it's not the case.
If somebody intentionally shoots a kid... That is different than if somebody was trying to like target a military thing and they killed someone as collateral
damage. But you had an IDF propagandist on who was literally saying that they are doing no such thing.
Right. No, but so in this case, I feel like Sam's position on that is very obviously polemically partisan, right? Like, and it's equally obvious from the context and the responses to him that we don't share his position, or at least I.
So you don't agree that the IDF is not intentionally targeting children?
Yeah. So all the cases that you mentioned, I don't know the details of. So I don't know.
You can check them out. Like, trust me, I'm telling you the truth.
For example, I'm listening to Jeremy Bowen, the BBC presenter who's been like embedded in conflict zones in the Middle East throughout his whole career, right? And he was, one thing I was just listening to recently was in the Lebanon war, whenever Israel were in the, you know, operation, what was it called? Grapes of Wrath. That there was a refugee or kind of like encampment, right, with just civilian population that was targeted, full of women and children, and you know it was targeted and a ton. I don't know how many people died, but a whole bunch of people. But the point is, everybody knew what that was, right? Mm-hmm. And apparently there were Hezbollah fighters who died nearby, and that's how the Israeli military justified it. But UNICEF and various other, you know, organizations, everybody said, right, but they intentionally targeted the civilian population. So it's just an example, but to say that happens 100%. Mm-hmm. I'm not like Sam Harris or Douglas Murray in saying that I think the Israeli military would never do such things, and in the current conflict would never do such things. Like, no. So
what did you make of him talking about the troubles and saying the troubles would be a lot more troublesome if jihad was involved? I mean,
the troubles would have been much more troublesome. You know, granted they were awful, but they would have been much worse if you added a layer of fanatical commitment to martyrdom and jihad, right? Like that makes things worse. And that's always the point I want to bang on about, that if you're not going to acknowledge that piece of it, you know, like the cancer on top of the bacterial infection, we're not talking about what's real.
Yeah, like
it's like nothing else can be bad. It's like if you just add jihad on top of everything or Islam, then it's truly bad.
There were a couple of people who messaged me about that, and like that particular line, I didn't mind so much because it just, you know, it was like kind of ridiculous. But the comment about, like, you know, the situation in Northern Ireland would be different if there was countries around where there were Irish-speaking populations with a similar culture. Like, there's the south of Ireland, mm-hmm. right? There's a rather famous neighboring country with a very similar culture and language. So
I'm not drawing the parallel in terms of, like, saying, well, Hamas is just, you know, the IRA in waiting. No. I'm saying, though, that those kind of very strong feelings about the right to self-determination,
yeah,
if you relocated the population out of Gaza, like, that would be the second Nakba, wouldn't it? And the first Nakba led to a conflict that's lasted for longer than any of us have been alive.
Well, the analogy to Ireland, to make it a real analogy, I mean, there are reasons why it doesn't work great, but you'd also have to imagine, you know, a dozen other Irish-speaking states with Irish culture surrounding this whole problem that those the Northern Irish would be displaced to if they had their Nakba of ethnic cleansing, right? Like it's a different situation.
Yeah, that I will say that in general, I think that, you know, that conversation with Sam about geopolitics, and in particular his view about Muslims and about the Gaza-Palestine conflict, that, like, I find it very naive and superficial and extremely polemical and partisan. So,
is it discrediting for you when someone like that is on your show and saying things like there's a stealth Islamist jihadist takeover in the UK, or 300,000 people came out in support of Hamas? Like,
it's discrediting in terms of how seriously I take their opinion on those kind of topics. Absolutely. Like,
those topics.
Well, like, so as you've said, you know, in terms of like election ballot rigging vaccine safety, I think that's fine, right? So I don't think it is, and I think the mistake would be that assuming that he can't do, like, that it all has to come as a package deal, right?
Because really, so you don't think there's anything that is completely discrediting of someone? Like, I mean,
oh no, it can be. I mean, I think it reveals the level of research that you're, and the level of bias that you have, and what you're willing to, like, state confidently in public. So absolutely, I think it has broader implications on that. But it's more that, so if you say, like, I mean, just in terms of, you could say that is completely discrediting of Sam's approach to, like, research and to like controversial topics involving anything to do with the Middle East or Europe for that matter. But I mean that it wouldn't discredit when he says something that is correct and based on good.
Would it can you find Alex Jones credible in something? Like, maybe he's very good at making, I don't know, spaghetti.
Yeah. So that it's the same. That would be the same thing.
So will you be promoting Alex Jones's spaghetti recipe on your platform?
No. But that is what I mean. So maybe the question you're asking is different, because as a source, yes, I think stuff like that is discrediting and does mean that you, you know, people should view you differently if the, like, depending on their view, whatever it was before, right? But they should absolutely take that into consideration on other topics. All I'm saying is that it doesn't mean that you will automatically be wrong, right? Which would speak to that point that, like, yes, Brett Weinstein or what's his face, Alex Jones, they can get things right. It doesn't mean they're discredited if...
But I don't see you promoting Brett Weinstein episodes ever.
No. But yeah, so I'm not... I would say that it, my argument is just, if you're saying, does that mean that the, you know, the person will always be discredited on every topic? No, but it definitely should impact the level of trust and credibility that you lend to them overall.
So would you be happy to have Sam back on and promote his work and praise him as a good liberal and reasonable intellectual?
I don't think we've done that in the past two times we've interacted.
I think you have.
But I would say that, like, in terms of how much that I think I would get out of any future conversations with Sam that are not arranged in a more debate-like format, you know, I basically don't think that there's much value to be gained. Like, you would, so I think it would need to be something with, like, set timers and the topic, like, agreed upon in order for it to be worthwhile to do, because the way it is, or the way it has been on our podcast with, you know, in one case a writer reply, but in the other case an interview, the dynamics are a little bit like mixed between you're interviewing someone, but you're also debating them. So, like, you know, it's rude to interrupt someone who's going on for a long time. But if they're your guest, it's kind of more acceptable, but in a debate, right, it shouldn't be like that, because you should give people equal amounts of time.
I just feel like genocide denier is like a whole new level. And I mean, for me, it's like, it's not an abstract anymore that if my family and everyone that looked like me was being genocided, where Sam would stand. He would be pumping out propaganda supporting that every 2 weeks. He would be saying, don't be deterred by the images of babies that are being pulled out of the rubble. It sucks to see it, but don't be deterred, because the army doing this is moral and good and civilized. And
yeah, I agree that, like, the extremity of his position on Gaza, Palestine, Muslims in Europe should be readily apparent to all. If not through his content, like, if you only came across his content through the interviews that we did with him, the second, the Right to Reply interview we just recorded should make that clear. And actually, a lot of the feedback that we got after that episode.
But that's because of him. That's what I'm saying. He's unhinged on his own. It's not like you pushed him there.
See, I would disagree, because I think that Sam, if we wanted to have a conversation where we didn't talk about any of that, like, we didn't bring up his stance on Israel-Palestine, because as you said, right, he didn't cover it on the episode with Chris Williamson, we could have done that, but we thought we should. And I think that a lot of people saw from our discussion with him how extreme his stance was, not just the ethnic cleansing statement, but other things that he said, you know, throughout the content. So I think in that respect that it was useful, and that if it were the case that we wanted to, you know, avoid it and kind of make Sam more comfortable, we really could have done that. So I think Sam's views are maybe for you, they're already, you know, completely clear. But, like, I suspect for a bunch of people, they became a lot more clearer through that conversation.
Well, I just hope that you guys won't be calling him a good liberal that comes off so well to your ears and stuff like that in the future.
I think partly, Ina, I will say that partly I think your assessment of how much, like, say, for example, Matt aligns with Sam's take on things is skewed by the
degree to which he says, by just what he says. That's all. I don't know him anything outside of that.
Yeah, but so I suspect part of it is by how far you are absolutely aware of all the stuff that Sam does and why that would be a bad thing to flag. But I don't think that,
but he's like, an academic that is a professional guru decoder who has decoded Sam Harris a few times.
So this is the thing. I would say that, like, a lot of our audience would not, well, you know, it's all relative, right? But there's a bunch of people that think that we are negatively obsessed with Sam, because almost all occasions where we mention him, it's a dig or something like that.
Right.
But that, if the perception was that we aligned very strongly with Sam and were like just always recommending him as a very good source.
No, I don't say that, though. To be clear, my position is that you are sympathetic and sometimes frame him as a good liberal and also several times plug his content and say such and such episode was good. Do check it out.
Yeah, so
you wouldn't do if it was Alex Jones or Brett Weinstein.
Right, so I will say that, like, I'd be absolutely clear that, like, in terms of Sam's, foreign policy or anything to do with Gaza, Palestine, I think he's extreme, and obviously extreme, and that I wouldn't recommend that to anyone. And I hope that people would see there's a difference in, like, the position that I have, and, like, I think Matt would feel the same way. But in terms of if Sam, as a heterodox source, does a good takedown with a vaccine doctor about, you know, the anti-vaccine rhetoric or whatnot, I think the fact that Sam is so respected in a heterodox sphere.
But you're helping him stay respected when his views are quite bad.
Right, but I think that he is, Sam doesn't need our help to...
No, sure, he's bigger than that, but why contribute at all?
Yeah.
Why legitimize as academics who are professionally decoding these people?
Yeah, because, like, so if Sam, in the same way, like, if Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan did have on a vaccine doctor before the pandemic, and I'd happily recommend for any, like, heterodox, sympathetic people to go watch that episode.
Without any disclaimers about how Joe Rogan is a general freak.
No. Yeah, I think, though, I would agree that in general you should, you know, that you should have a kind of good understanding of what Joe is. But recommending particular content where, you know, he is a heterodox source that people trust, like Huberman, is the same, right? I think that it is worthwhile because those people in those ecosystems will, like, watch a Joe Rogan episode with a vaccine doctor, but they won't watch an episode of This Week in Virology. And Sam has, like, you know, his heterodox bona fides quite well attested to. So the fact that he is not endorsing, you know, ballot voter fraud conspiracies or whatever, it is a low bar. I completely agree.
The bar is inside the ground now.
But I think it is still better that is happening. Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, thank you. I think we can go in circles for ages about this. Perhaps we will pick it up in another 2 years and we'll see where you are at that time. And
I appreciate the conversation, and I apologize for my poorly thought out various geopolitics takes. I freely admit I'm not particularly well informed on a whole bunch of those issues. So, yeah, it's mostly, you know, just my perspective based on reading and stuff I've done, but not greatly informed.
Well, better informed than a lot of other heterodox types, but yeah, no, thank you for coming on. I have to give you credit for that, because I'm sure you knew I'd be questioning some stuff, and this wouldn't be
it. Yeah, I did expect that. It is what your reputation suggests. So, yeah.
Last time you called me a debate bro before you left.
I'll not make the same mistake, but I
no, it's
I will.
Okay. I admit that I can have that tendency.
Yeah. Well, me too. I do enjoy debating things, but I'm probably not as effective at it as some.
I hope that you did not find that I was too mean, or I mean, because that's what people say.
No, I think you're fair. Like, and I can see, you know, the perspective that you're like coming from with it. So, like, you know, I think your audience knows as well that there's still a whole bunch of stuff that you would like would critique about the way that we approach things. And I think that's perfectly.
And if it wasn't about IDW criticism, I honestly wouldn't care. It's just that niche to me is like a strange position.
Yeah, I get it. I totally understand that. It's you know, it is your expert wheelhouse, and probably specifically with Sam, you know, it would be very strange if you had no perspective at all. But I will say, and it's not to you specifically, Aina, at all at this point, but just a general point is, like, in the conversation with Sam, you know, whenever he goes on for like 7 or 8 minutes and says like 15 points,
mm-hmm.
And I know it's a tactic, but mm-hmm. it ends up that you have to choose like between,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
10 things to respond to. And I know that's a, you know, a kind of Gishgal thing mm-hmm. that people do, but it means that I am also very frustrated
yeah.
afterwards with like the things that I have to let slide. And I think a lot of people would disagree with what I, you know, choose to prioritize to respond to. So I get it, because I feel the same way.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and we've discovered you're a Hamas supporter, so I'm sure people will be interested
yeah,
to know that.
That'll be news for everyone. But yeah. But well, have a good evening, I believe,
yeah.
in Canada.
Yeah, it's almost midnight, so all right. Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support it, there are several ways you can do that. You can share it online, talk about what you just heard, you can leave a 5-star review to help others find it too, and you can also subscribe via patreon.com/nicemangoes, no E in mangoes. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter before it's completely wrecked, you'll find me at Nice Mangoes. Again, no E in mangoes.